you're just hating on Boston for some reason, and you are pissing me off right now, so that's fine.
I'm not hating on Boston.
And here's why I'm not hating on Boston. I'll let the listeners decide.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Zebra Stripes podcast. We are back after a week off. You know, Coach Witt had to get his mojo back. I'm blaming Coach Witt because he can't really do anything about it because he's, you know, a few states away. I
have big shoulders. I can take that. And I'll tell you, you didn't wake up to snow this morning coming down like I did. So forgive me if my mojo was interrupted by snow in the third week of April.
Yeah, I feel very bad for you guys when stuff like that happens. I don't remember those days purposely. I have burnt those out of my brain.
No, but
I woke up to a brisk, you know, 50s that it warmed up to a nice, luscious 77 and sunny. So I cannot relate.
But I'll tell you another thing I woke up to. Just, you know, 24 more hours after a scintillating Celtic victory over the Nets. So, you know, more time in between game one and two to kind of get fired up.
Absolutely. And I think clearly Celtics-Nets, that's the marquee game that the NBA has put out there. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, this is episode number what? What episode are we on with?
You know, during that week off, I forgot. So I'm going to say it's 18.
Episode 18.
Like, ooh. Dave Collins, for those of you that are Celtic fans, ooh, from out back in the day.
Okay, Dave Collins, episode 18.
Collins. Dave Collins.
Collins.
Yeah. Florida State grad, too, by the way. Left-handed redhead, about 6'8 or 9, played the center position. Would fit great in today's small ball era, by the way. So ahead of his time.
Okay.
Throwing it out there to the young guns like yourself.
Yeah, I know a Cowan. Okay. I'm familiar with a Cowans. Okay. I don't know if I'm familiar with that. Cowans. Okay. Now that you know.
Yeah.
I think about it. Yes, but you are right, by the way, so you should give yourself an applause. It is episode 18. And on this 18th episode, we get to talk about how the Boston Celtics looked their way to a game one win. And I'm here for it. I'm here for it. The newly crowned defensive player of the year made one pass too many that 9 times out of 10 ends up with you not getting a shot off. But in this one time, he hit Jason Tatum, and Tatum was able to catch, peer away at the same exact time, avoid Kyrie Irving, and get the ball out of his hands all in a second.
You're just trying to incite me, and it's so blatantly obvious that any of the insightful basketball listeners that watch that game would have a spectacularly different interpretation of the events.
Wit, has anything that I've said, is any of it not true?
Well, let's take on your the most basic part of the interpretation, right? Because I think it boils down to this: whether or not you believe that sequence of events was, you know, luck or serendipity or something like of the sort, or whether in fact that play between Brown, Smart, ultimately Tatum, okay, perfectly symbolized or represented the change that the Celtics have shown in the last third of the season. So at a different time and space, there's no doubt that everything that you're talking about might have happened long before the winning bucket was scored. But when the karma changed for the Celtics and the message that Udoka had been putting through throughout sunk in, now perfectly they executed to a T and got rewarded for it, because that's what basketball gods do to good basketball. And by the way, that's what left Kyrie standing there like a pirouette when he could have stepped in and taken a charge or done anything else after, you know, what other people are going to say was yeah, a spectacular game by him. But when the time came defensively, he got out of the way.
I think when the time came defensively, he does kind of what he does defensively.
Well, and then the Nets, get out of the way. That's what they do, and so they lost.
Well, I think they don't necessarily get out of the way. I think they did exactly what they wanted to do.
Well, let's just say
they ran a guy off a wide open shot.
Well, they gave up a layup, which is also what they did in the last two possessions. So they lost the game on two layups.
So we're going to argue over this, right? Because
I'm going to
had him pass the ball with 2 seconds remaining.
Right. Good basketball decision.
Catch it, spin, and throw it up quickly in order to beat the buzzer.
I'm going to say to a guy who made a good basketball cut, caught the ball, pivoted because he's a good athlete, and at 6'10", finished easily at the rim.
In the second that the pass was thrown just a smidgen too far for Kyrie to get his hand on it, because Kyrie was going for the steal. That's right. Why he was able to get
No, I didn't see that as going for the steal. I thought he was going for the strip on the catch.
Strip steal, same.
Well, no, steal would be you're in defensive position. You anticipate, and I'm not saying that this should have happened necessarily, but you're in position, you anticipate, recognize what's happening, step into the passing lane, take the ball, and then everyone says, Jesus, you overpassed. But okay. In this case, you went for the strip, which is kind of a finesse play, because the guy you've already mentioned on the broadcast, Marcus Smart, first guard in since the glove, Gary Payton, yep, to become defensive player, Marcus Smart would not have made the play Kyrie Irving did.
Marcus Smart would have fouled.
No, he would have taken a charge.
He would have fouled.
He would have taken a charge. That's all right. You're just hating on Boston for some reason, and you are pissing me off right now, so that's fine.
I'm not hating on Boston. Here's why I'm not hating on Boston.
I'll let the listeners decide.
Please do. And here's why I'm not hating on Boston. Because on paper, Boston should probably have gotten blown out that game. Because like some of the they have the far superior coach. That's the number one thing.
We all know NBA is not built on who's got the best coach.
Oh, I disagree. We can argue this.
That's another point that again,
we're gonna get into this as well.
Okay.
I think that the game plan of we're going to rough up KD.
How are the San Antonio Spurs doing, by the way? Oh, I forgot. Popovich, that's right. They're not in the playoffs. I'm sorry. Yeah, I was just trying to figure out where. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
Who in the Spurs is better than, than Jaylen Brown?
Thank you. I rest my case. That's my point.
Yeah, I didn't say it doesn't matter about players. I'm saying that coaches now matter in the playoffs because your players equal out.
Okay.
Right? When all things are equal, you got to go to whatever the denominator is.
That's coaching. Yeah, I'll give you some of that.
So they had a plan. Hey, we're not going to let KD get anything easy. That's contrary to what Milwaukee did last year, where they just let KD go God mode. But you can't let KD go God mode because Kyrie Irving's there. So they said, we're not going to let KD get anything easy. And they roughed that man up for 40-plus minutes.
Yep.
Now, do I think that the refs let them get away with that for the next, you know, 3 games to 7 games? I don't know. But if they can and disrupt him and not let him get a rhythm, they're going to win this series, because Kyrie Irving cannot be your best player and win a series. Not with Kevin Durant sitting there. Like, Kyrie can't be the dude when the dude is next to him, you know, and giving the ball up because he's tired of getting beat from the baseline to the three-point line. So I give all the credit to the coaching there. There was no adjustments made by the Nets, evident by the fact, by the way, that that Andre Drummond was doing whatever he wanted in there, and that man only played like 20-something minutes. And I'm sitting here going, like, why is Andre Drummond not in the game? Does he just not like Drummond? Did Drummond have sex with this man's wife or something? I just could not figure it out. And I saw it late down the stretch in games with the Nets where Drummond would just go off, and then all of a sudden they would bring in the skinny kid. I struggle to understand. I struggle with his name, to remember his name. He's not a bad young player, but he's not Drummond.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't bring that level of physicality that Drummond brings, that now without Robert Williams to go with Bane, I just don't think the Celtics have an answer for. And so with the Celtics not having to worry about Drummond, they just they put their sights on beating up KD and getting him to force up long threes or contested two-pointers, and they let Kyrie just dance. And Kyrie dances better than anybody in the league. But if Kyrie is your leading scorer, if he is your top player in the game, then there's a good chance you're probably going to lose.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of that. I'm not sure about that last part because, I mean, I think in the NBA, when you have more than one superstar in a team, then, you know, I'm not sure if, you know, every game is different. So Kyrie did almost lead them to a victory. So I think it could have worked. And, you know, the Celtics are going to have to look at, obviously, they're going to try that. I agree again. They're going to play Durant exactly physically as they can within the rules. They got to watch foul trouble themselves. I think they got to, you know, decide what they want to do. I would not switch that, you know, 5-1 ball screen with not Aaron Bane. You confuse Bane with Daniel Tice, but that's
– I'm sorry, Daniel Tice, not
yeah,
Bane.
That's fair. Bane was, you know, kind of the same deal, but Tice better version. But
definitely upgraded version. My apologies to Daniel Tice.
Yeah. I'm not switching that one. That one surprised me by – I don't even know. That might have just been accidental by the Celts putting the five on him on the high screen, then letting Kyrie do whatever he wants. I would chase him over the screen and get him into the mid-range. Now I'd give up two rather than three. I would try to fight over, trap it, maybe get the ball out of his hands early, then scramble around. I don't know. I haven't given it that much thought, but I basically agree with you that they're going to defend Durant just the way they did, and then they've got to look at the Kyrie deal. But anyway, I think it was a huge game, probably for whichever team won it. So in this case, huge win for Boston, huge win for the NBA, because you're totally right that it's the, you know, it has at the very least an Eastern Conference, like a championship feel to it. You know, it's the marquee game, and now it looks like it'll live up to that. And on paper, I mean, let's face it, and I still doubt the Nets, but that's why a lot of experts pick the Nets, because they got two superstars that are, you know, probably better than the two Celtics superstars. So, you know, it really comes down to this: can you turn it on at the end of the year and win? And the answer is sometimes you can. Now, sometimes you can't, right? So that's the Nets. Can they, you know, play at a high level? So they showed they can, and if they play, you know, if they tighten things up and play close to that and KD gets it going, then look out, Boston. But on the other hand, this is a huge momentum win for Boston. Shot in the arm. I said during the game at halftime, look for Boston to use a burst, because they've been a second-half team in the last part of the year. So I said, I need to see a burst from Boston. And right out, they did, you know, they got up 10, and then it was 15, and then 11 going into the fourth. So that was a good sign, I thought, for Boston. But like a lot of teams, they've also given up leads and lost games, but they've given them up. And it looked like they were reverting back to their old selves there. It looked like they were beaten. But so I you know, this game too now, right? That's what makes a great series. Now, you know, what gives you, right? Does Boston gets it? That's enormous. You know, the Nets do, and they're going home with basically what they wanted, a split.
So I'm gonna have to make you mad again. And it's okay because
I'm better mad than when I'm not.
You New England fans, y'all are passionate about your team at another level, and I appreciate it. But do you really think that Marcus Smart was the defensive player of the year? Really think he was deep? I mean, over Embiid and what Embiid has done this year?
Well, I mean, I think like the MVP award in general, it doesn't necessarily always go to the bestest, right? Because we could argue that LeBron, right, could have got it every single year, maybe rightly so, and this and that. Yeah. So sometimes it goes to a guy that doesn't. So in this case, I think they rewarded grit. Right, determine everything that Marcus Smart is. They were probably aware that they had a guy that they're making history with in voting him MVP. I have no idea. This is the politicking of it, but yep. Maybe that played a role. So they had a deserving guy that was going to a kind of a new, right, so a throwback to the glove. You know, the Celtics were a feel-good story latter part of the year, so you got that. Like, I don't think he gets it if the Celtics don't make the run they made. So, sure, I don't think there's, you know, Embiid, I don't, you know, different personifies something different. Definitely a force. You know, and some Celtics fans, like myself, might even argue, shit, I mean, Robert Williams might be a, you know, more dominant defensive player than Smart, for God's sake.
Well, I think that's where the fact that Smart won it was surprising to me, is because you do have another elite level defender on your team. Like if I'm putting the all defense team together, Smart's first team, Robert Williams is either first team or second team because Embiid is first team, or he's first team and Embiid is second team, or he's first team as a forward and not first team as a center. Maybe he's just like a big. I don't know how they do it now. They've tried to go away from positions to a certain extent to try to make sure that they reward people who should be rewarded over people who should not. And I respect that. But it was just like, I don't know, man. I feel like that. I used to kind of think like, no, that doesn't make sense. But it feels at every turn as if, for as much as people like Embiid, they find a way to not give him awards. like
I think that'll change once Philly, right? Because Philly has to shake, similar to Boston. Philly's got to shake the bridesmaid role. You know, they got to shake that prima donna. They got to shake the whole thing. And interestingly, Philly has to shake it, and then Harden has to shake it himself. So Harden and Philly are united in their quest to shake, you know, the loser's image, if you will.
Well, yeah, I think having Embiid playing out of his effing mind helps. Like, the dude is just unstoppable right now.
Yeah,
you know, in there. But I want to go back to another thing with the Boston. Like, is it just me? Am I just the only person that feels like Steve Nash is just there?
Well,
I don't feel an impact of Steve Nash at all.
Right.
Like from substitution patterns to the amount that he plays his five or his stars, like to the way he tries to like I don't feel an impact from Steve Nash at all. It feels like he's just there. He's just along for the ride. And I wonder what he's doing on his iPad. I doubt if it's actual basketball stuff. I think he's watching movies or something. I don't know. It's really strange to me.
I'm gonna be guilty of what some friends of ours have said to us occasionally when coaching conversations come up and I become quiet and they go, ah, Whit, you know, you coach, so you're not going to say anything.
We all coach.
I'm just going to say, you know, like unless you're in their practices, unless you're in their huddles, you don't know. That's your perception. I mean, I have, you know, the announcers, in fact, made note of what, you know, one of those very animated timeouts and, you know, what he was saying and doing. So the idea that he's sitting on his hands, I mean, that's clearly the last thing that's true. And obviously that's not what he was about as a player. So, you know, people, again, it just gets to coaching personas. Maybe, you know, I mean, you're not the only one questioning his ascension to that role, but I, you know, hey man.
I not only question his ascension to the role, like I can go back to him as a player. Like I've always thought that Steve Nash had a level of overrated to him.
Right.
Like when you look at the back-to-back MVP seasons and you look at the other players that were around that were MVP candidate worthy, they all dwarf his numbers. Like they all dwarf his impact because at the end of the day, Phoenix never did anything. Like first round, second round, sometimes the Western Conference Finals, maybe once, I think, and they were out of there. Like it was a regular season type of offense that in the playoffs never could hold up. One of the years I think they got screwed. That was the year Stoudemire took the step off the off the bench, and they suspended him because he took literally a step off the bench.
Right.
When they were really like on that, but for the life of what Steve Nash has been, he's been an energetic. He's been a for where he came from. He's a ball player, yeah. But to be a back-to-back MVP.
Well, we're not debating again. I've already hit on that. We're not debating whether he deserved to be the MVP or not. I'm not going to go back in time. I mean, I think that we've talked about that before. The Jordans of the world could get it every year.
I mean, beyond just the Jordans of the world, like there are a lot of people who didn't get a crack at the apple because this man got it two times in a row, and now this same man with really no coaching experience whatsoever, and rolls into a luxury job. A job where you inherit two stars and then you get a third star, and literally, like I'm watching ISO ball try to run a pick to get ISO, and that's all that they did essentially the entire second half. It was give it to Kyrie, let Kyrie cook. He gets in trouble. Give it to KD, let KD cook. Like.
Well, that's, I mean, by the way, that's become a lot of the NBA. That was, you know, I was going to say earlier that Nash was a part of really the modern revolution of the game with 7 seconds or less in Phoenix, and the pick and roll is the staple of the NBA, and offensively all the ways you run it, and then defensively all the ways you've got to try to guard it. So,
this is 7 seconds. Like none of this.
It's not with the Nets, but I'm just saying he's been around that change in the game of basketball at the highest level. So he's very familiar. And by the way, I would say this, like, here's why we know that he's probably a pretty damn good coach, because in today's athletic world, if he wasn't, then those players, the superstars, would sell him out. He wouldn't, you know, it would be Westhead getting moved off the Showtime for Magic. It would be Doug Collins getting moved out of the way for Phil, for Michael, and all the other examples, which, as people are hearing my point, they're probably thinking of in their brain, oh, yeah, this player got that coach fired, and this player got that coach fired. So if I take your argument to the logical conclusion, if he couldn't coach at all, you know what? They'd be doing what the Lakers did at the end of the year. They'd fucking tank it and make sure their coach was out. And instead, they're not. They're competing their ass off.
Except they're the ones who wanted to coach. This is their coach.
Okay, well, that's like, that's they okay. Wanted that guy. Okay, well, then that's hey, that's the way the world works, man.
No, I get it. I'm just saying, like, when I look at them play, like, sometimes you just can't listen to players because I like if you change places with Steve Nash and Pop, this is a completely different team.
Yeah, maybe, and maybe. You know, maybe Kyrie's not playing for Pop. Maybe he is.
I don't know. I don't know because I don't think Pop's ever had a problem getting players who are good to play for him.
Well, he's had one. You're forgetting
who?
Who?
Yeah, who did? Who the, did the not
playoff win? Finals MVP who left San Antonio to go to Toronto to wind up with the Clippers.
That I feel like that had less to do with Pop and more to do with him wanting to do something other than San Antonio.
Well, that's a pretty big gamble.
I mean, he ended up in LA.
Yeah.
He's been paid 2 years not to play, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, well, right. But you just said who wouldn't want to play for Pop, and I gave you a superstar.
No, I'm saying who couldn't play for Pop. Like, if Pop's in New Jersey and they're in New Jersey where they want to be at and Pop's there, I'm just saying if all things are equal, you put Pop there, he's doing something more than what Steve Nash is doing.
Yeah. I mean, probably Steve Nash would probably say he is too, because that's what experience will do for you. But, God,
you really do toe the line with these coaching conversations. I like it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I like it.
I mean, okay, that's interesting.
Uh huh. Okay. Yeah. I mean, if I, it's got to be pretty egregious for me. If I'm gonna.
Why would it be egregious? People criticize you all the time for your coaching, Whit.
That's
hard for the course. When you become a coach, you're the one that told me this. People don't want to talk about you. There's nothing you can do about it.
Right, but you know what? When that's the general public or whoever it is, I mean, go right ahead. I'd like to think that basketball coaches of something that might, you know, be a little bit slower too if they watched me in practice or games or over the years. And again, if they want to criticize, go ahead. Critique, come on, that's what we do as coaches, so that's totally different. I think coaches are going to be, you know.
Okay, so if
and coaches that want to crit, right? And that, you know what's interesting, because you're making me think about it, right? The coaches that, because it's good for TV, right? So the ex-coach that goes on the air that is willing to be out there, you know, that's one of those fine lines. So I think, you know, but if you're in coaching, I mean, you have too much respect for how hard the job is to take too many unnecessary shots at someone. I mean, that's really my base point.
Okay. So you have, because again, I'm not going to just let this one just fly for a second. So yeah. Stay with me. You have too much respect to just take shots. I don't necessarily think I'm taking shots. I said
unnecessary shots. Yeah.
I think I'm making legitimate observations on what I'm seeing as a team that doesn't seem to have cohesion at all.
Well, I think they're minus some points. Like I think if you gave the Nets and I like Andre Drummond, so don't get me wrong. I like him. I think he's past his prime. I think, you know, I don't know that he's perfectly suited for today's NBA, but he's good. And he's a great backup. But you give them a frontline modern center, Clint Capella, you give them whoever the hell you want to give the Nets. Now they're just, I mean, guess what?
Why is Clint Capella a frontline modern center? Clint Capella can't shoot a lick.
Yeah, I don't know.
So what makes them frontline modern?
I mean, for me, ability to run, defend, rebound.
So it's his ability to rim run.
Yeah.
Ability to rim run.
Absolutely. So then the combination of rim run, switch, you know,
athletic enough to guard people.
Yeah. All about it. And yeah, so I mean, you know, and that's why I honestly, like, now that I've seen game one, like Robert Williams with the Celtics now, if he comes, and I don't think he'll, if they lose, he might come back game three. You know, there's all that speculation, but when he comes back, but let's just say if he came back tomorrow healthy, and I think the Celtics can win the thing in five games, like, he's a difference maker. Partly because of what he is and partly because what the Nets don't have.
Well, and here is my problem with the thought process of phasing out the quote-unquote old school big. Yep. They absolutely abuse these new school bigs. They absolutely abuse them, but they don't play enough. They keep putting them on the bench because the analytics tell them, we need to get somebody out here who's going to space the floor so we can shoot more threes. But you're literally just beating their head in with this guy. At some point, they've got to make an adjustment. At some point, they have to, right? They can't just sit there and let this guy go for 40, 50 points. They're going to lose the game.
Well, not right. So that's where and I don't have the numbers for you. I'd be interested if someone does. I'll find out this summer out from people, because I do think you're right. There's a quotient there about when a guy, because to some degree, the Joker is close to it. Okay. So when you have a guy that can just play bully ball down low, then, you know, at what point is that worth what you're giving up? You know, because, at the other end, all your rotations get, you know, screwed up with, you know, and so you got that defensive scramble right away. And then meanwhile, on your offensive end, if you lock down a big, or you're playing someone that cannot shoot the ball, and you can protect the paint with an extra defender, then that makes your defensive rotations that much easier. So that's where the analytics come in. At what point is the low post threat? You know, the 7'5", 290-pound, you know, Giannis. Okay. You know, it's kind of like the new school NFL outside linebackers as they become just, you know, right? Yeah. These freaks of nature guys. Now, okay, I think that guy's back in the game, but I think rightly, until the analytics, and I don't have the quotient, until the math says, yeah, what we're given outweighs what we're giving up, what we're getting outweighs what we're giving up, then it's not gonna happen.
All I know is Andre Drummond, in 17 minutes of time, had 8 points and 4 rebounds. His replacement, Claxton, had 13 points and 8 rebounds in 31 minutes. So in almost double the time, he doubles the rebounds, and he gets, what, 5 more points? I guarantee you, if Andre Drummond plays 31 minutes, he's getting 14 rebounds. Right. 31 minutes, Andre Drummond is cleaning the boards out. Like, because that's what he's always done. And, right. And they had no real answer for him on the inside except to try to, you know, put the guy, Al Horford sometimes was there, but he was chasing people around a lot. I didn't particularly like that, by the way. Al Horford on KD. I don't think that's a recipe for success.
Not a steady diet, but you don't want, you know, Tatum to get in foul trouble either. So you got to move it around.
Yeah, you got to move it around. You definitely got to take your chances. I personally, by the way, I don't think I would prefer to see the Celtics let Robert Williams get a little more healthy.
Yeah, of course you would, because you want to see Brooklyn win.
Well, no, I think that Brooklyn has a good chance to win regardless of whether he comes back.
No, they have no chance to win if he comes back. But that's,
oh no, they definitely do.
No chance.
That's a Celtics.
No
fan.
Chance. You just if you can't win the game the other night, that then you
was lucky.
No,
KD's right. not going. KD's not going to spend this series going whatever he went, like, I don't know, 9 for 24.
Nor will Kyrie do what he did. Okay.
Oh, no, Kyrie can do what he does.
No, he would not do that. That was, look at that was an extraordinary performance that he may do one more time in the series, maybe two. Maybe two. No, it won't be. It won't be more than that. Won't be more than that. Not that. Not as. Not what he did.
Well, I mean, he won't do that because Kevin Durant won't go like right. 9 for 24.
Right. So that's part. Of
it. He'll still go. He'll still shoot a high percentage because he's always shot a high percentage. Like,
yeah, but he won't.
He'll cook because he cooks. That's what he does.
Right.
I think if both of those guys are dealing, and KD is KD, it doesn't matter what. It doesn't matter what the Celtics do.
Well, it does because the Nets still have to defend, so we're back to that little fly in the ointment. And I thought they did defend at times better. The Nets
do. Do you like the Nets or the Celtics in a shootout?
Nets.
So.
No, that's why I thought this game to some degree favored the Nets for sure. But you know, and I thought the Nets at times defended well, but their Achilles heel got them, like I said, late. But at other times too, they didn't inbound the ball. They made mistakes that cost them. And
absolutely. I think that last possession where Kyrie looked as if he wasn't trying to score. He looked like he was almost trying to run the clock down more before he lined up a shot.
Yep.
That last possession that he then kicked out to KD, and KD had to take a crazy three with two people on him fading away from 35
yep.
feet.
Yep.
Like it almost felt as if Kyrie let off the aggressiveness on that, which is weird because he had been just, you know, mowing people down. I was surprised that he took the step back.
Right. I'm not going to make a comment because if I did, it would show some of that Boston bias against Kyrie. And obviously I've already acknowledged what a superb game he played, but I've told you, you just mentioned that possession, which is winning time. And I told you the defensive possession, which is winning time. And, you know, I think as good as he is, and you've already said it yourself anyway, he got you beat, you know, so he can't be the guy. So he lost. So.
No, I get you. By the way, who was guarding Kyrie most that game? Is that the defensive player of the year?
Well, I mean, again,
is it weird that you win defensive player after getting cooked for 39 points? I'm just being petty now. It's like,
yeah, wow. I mean, they switched a lot, as you know. The Celtics switch almost everything, so it's really not, yeah. So,
yeah. So he doesn't have to take the
no, because
the defensive player of the year, is he a switcher?
Well, it depends. That's all scout based, right? So he maybe not. In some cases, it might not be. But in this case, like you said, I think the game plan was load to
beat up
KD
and kind of give.
Yeah, just kind of play that one and see. But they may have that you know, adjustments, right? The NBA series of games of adjustment in games. So they may have to look at that. I thought there was a couple obvious possessions where they got too far away from, and I'm sure it was a mistake where they got shaded the, you know, too off of Kyrie to KD. It's like, well, wait a second, you can't just let him swing the ball back to him that easy. That's automatic. And by the way, he's going off a little bit, so what are you doing? Like, get off some of these other people. And even if you have to make Seth Curry beat you or somebody else, which I think, and he's not necessarily a guy I'd come completely off of either, but you know, you gotta look at that.
I'd take my chances in seeing if Seth Curry can put up 50.
Right. Right. I mean, that's right.
That's literally what I mean.
Yeah.
I can tell you.
You know what?
As a basketball purist, I want to see Marcus Smart guard Kyrie Irving. I don't want to see any switches.
Well, now you're well, hey, guess what?
I want to see Smart on Irving.
Did you grow up with dinosaurs?
What do you mean?
I mean, Jesus Christ.
Because I want to see guys lock guys up. Like,
no, because you're just not going to see it in the modern game. That's
you're not going to see it because they know they're going to get cooked.
Well, that's always been the case, right? Because in the NBA, as it, in any league, but the NBA is known for it, good offense beats good defense every day of the week, right? Lower levels, good defense can beat offense. In the NBA, people score the ball. So you can't, there's no answer for that when someone's going. There's no answer. So locking up.
But if you get them early not going.
Oh, yeah, that's a, you know.
You might have something.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So that's, again, that's an adjustment. How much switching?
Like, do we come out and see a situation where Smart says, "Nah, I got him." Where Smart gives him to Beasley. Beasley, I got him.
It might happen. You know, the other, I actually go the other way and say, you know, you might see the Celtics in a zone. So, you know, and I'm serious because, right, more NBA people from time to time will play some type of zone. So I think you could see that out of the Celtics more than you're going to see, you know, straight up, no switching, all of that. So they Celtics can't play those guys straight up. They know that.
So in the end, by the way, because I know we've made this really Celtics heavy, and I'm here for it, because this is, to me, this is the most intriguing first round matchup. I really don't care about any of the other first round matchups, to be honest with you. I think that Atlanta is Atlanta. They're not beating Miami. I think that Philadelphia is going to run roughshod over Toronto. The small forward experiment that is Toronto.
Yeah.
By the way, what do you think about that? Like, I feel like Toronto is experimenting with, can we just put a bunch of 6'8 dudes, 6'8 to 6'9, ultra athletic guys who can do everything on the court and try to win ball games? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's, I mean, Nick Nurse is known for his experimentation and creative offensive and defensive systems. So Nurse is known for that. So he's the right guy. Maybe taking what we've been hinting at a little bit through here, taking this new NBA to maybe the next place, because maybe that's where it all goes. In fact, there's a great chance that is where it all goes.
I think there's a good chance that is where it all goes. Except, like when you run into a Joel Embiid.
Yeah, or you run in, or a Kyrie Irving.
Or a Kyrie Irving.
Or Jai Morant, or maybe Trae Young, or whatever whoever you think.
I want to like Trae Young so bad.
I'm in the same boat. I'm in the same boat.
I feel like I'm being a hater.
Yep.
But it's just something about his game that I don't like.
Yeah.
Like, it's something about what he does, even though what he does looks eerily similar to what a lot of other people do, that just doesn't seem like it can hold up nearly as well as what the other people can do.
Right.
Like, he doesn't cook like KD. He is not as dead lock in. Like, they keep trying to make this dude Steph Curry. He is not. Steph Curry's one of one. We need to stop looking for the next one of him. It's not coming. But, I want to like him, but then he does stuff like he did last game, and I'm like, nah, okay, that's why I don't rock with him. So,
who do you think who's your favorite to win the East and the West?
I think that right now Philadelphia, seems to have a formula that's going to be really hard to beat.
Okay.
How
about the West?
I think out West, it's going to be really hard to beat Phoenix.
Yeah.
Especially if Chris Paul can somehow stay healthy in a playoff run.
Right.
For the entirety of a playoff run.
Okay.
If he's healthy last year, I think they beat Milwaukee. And so
right.
I like them to run out.
And he's still got that little something to prove too, right? He's got to get over the top himself.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got the hump to get over too as well.
Yeah.
But I like his hump better, because if he gets over the hump, it's not gonna be, I went and teamed up with all the best players in the world.
God, you look frozen there. My God, you did it to yourself.
That's because I am frozen. Okay. Well, at least I was, because you were frozen. So while you were saying, hey, you look frozen, I was like, hey, you look frozen as well. I think that he is the quintessential, like, floor general. And if he's able to get it done, it will be the most impressive of all of the modern day stars that we've seen get it done or get over the hump. Because his hump didn't come with, I'm going to go to the Lakers with LeBron, which, by the way, I would love to see.
Who's the team, okay, besides Phoenix, and besides Philly, who's the best sleeper team in either division to win?
I think the biggest sleeper in the East is the Nets.
Okay.
If that can even be a sleeper, but I mean they're a seven seed, so I think the win. Actually, you know what? The winner of the Nets Celtics series, I think, has a really good chance to make a run and win it all.
Right, and so you know what I think? I think, but I'm not certain. It's kind of interesting. I think the biggest sleeper going in this whole thing is Miami.
Really?
Yeah, and and just even that reaction right there, and they're the number one seed, and that's what everyone's looking at Miami. And I'm saying, you know what? If Miami was like in Chicago or New York or wherever they were, right? But everyone's down on the beach, so no one really, it just get paid less attention to. I think Miami is like they're like the dark horse number one. Oh yeah, no, Miami's.
I just don't think Miami has enough bullets in the gun when it matters.
I hear you. I
think that's the thing that's going to kill them. Whereas I think that Boston and really Brooklyn, they just have guys that could literally just go and set the place on fire.
Okay, so I'm just telling you, I think Miami has a better chance than both Boston and.
I like it. I mean, this.
I think we're talking about
dark horse. What about in the West? What do you think in the West? Who's the dark horse in the West?
Well, in the West, I would say, interestingly, the dark horse has to be Golden State.
Dark horse is Golden State?
Yeah, I mean, they're barely bad. I mean, Curry's off the bench and Klay Thompson, I mean, Jesus, he's finally healthy. And
okay, you know, all right. I think the dark horse is Memphis, even after losing game one.
Right. Yeah.
Because I think they have a guy in Ja Morant who is that just torch it down type of dude. They have a big that they can bring in when they play other dominant bigs in Steven Adams. And then they have a lineup where they bring in Jaren Jackson, essentially play him at the five. That is your quintessential modern-day basketball NBA type of squad where you've got a bunch of 6'8", the 6'9", dudes running all around with Ja just doing Ja things, who plays like 6'8", because he jumps over everybody in the world to do whatever he wants. I think Memphis has a good chance to, and they know how to win if somebody gets hurt.
Yeah, I like Memphis too.
Yeah.
I like Memphis.
But that's interesting. Golden, I mean, you can't, if Steph gets healthy, if Steph is healthy, and now you have a healthy Steph, Klay, and Draymond, it's kind of hard to go against them. I mean, we've seen them do it before. And yep. They don't have to go through LeBron.
Nope.
And Kyrie, well, LeBron, because Kyrie was hurt. And
but I say that, but I think it's I'm all in on Phoenix. I mean, I think it's their year.
Yeah, I think I love what they do. I love their coach. I love how they play. I love the fact that they let Chris Paul be the crusty, crotchety old man. You know, on the team and kind of like just tell people what to do, and they're like, nope, that's Chris. We're just gonna listen.
So I'm not until someone beats the Bucks, I'm in on Milwaukee because their superstar plays the game the right way
There we go. We should have a drinking game.
Every time.
Whenever we say play the game the right way, we should just take a drink.
All right.
No. I think that's what it is.
I need to go to the fridge. But
I do too, actually.
Yeah. So I like them, but with Miami as my second pick if we were doing a pool. You know, I think.
Yeah. So you think Miami is, you think it's Phoenix and Miami as far as like the top two teams to get it done?
Well, I mean, I think it's Miami. Yeah. Well, that's why I'm saying, like, because in the public, nobody knows. Right. So that's what I'm saying. Guess what? So I'm in on them, even though no one else is. I'm in on them, but I'll take them at the odds. But meanwhile, I'll say, hey, it's Phoenix versus Milwaukee with a Phoenix win. But should Milwaukee stumble, which is possible for sure, then I'll just substitute in Miami is what I'm telling you. And I'll take Phoenix over Miami because I think it's their year.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
A Phoenix-Miami series would be really interesting for the – just because you know a guy like Jimmy Butler and a guy like Chris Paul. They're kind of cut the same way.
Yeah.
And Chris Paul's going to take a cheap shot on somebody because that's just what he does. Like, he's going to catch somebody slipping and try to slide a cheap shot in. And nobody on the Miami culture is to not accept any of that BS. Like,
right. Yeah.
So then I wonder how what's the over-under on seconds until Udonis Haslam checks into the game once Chris Paul takes the cheap shot on somebody on the team. I put the over-under at 45 seconds.
That's pretty good.
Like, and by the way, I'm probably taking the under because the moment the cheap shot happens, Udonis is checking himself in the game. Like, he doesn't even have to worry about, like, the coach looking over at him. Udonis is checking himself in the game, and he's going, no, I got it, coach. Don't worry about it. We're good. I'll pay the fine. So game twos, they're game twos as we're recording this right now. The Heat are playing the Hawks. The Grizzlies play the Timberwolves, and the Suns play the Pelicans. Do you see any one of those teams making it 1-1?
So the Heat dispose of the Hawks, Suns dispose of the Pelicans, and what's the third game?
Grizzlies, Timberwolves. Timberwolves are up 1-0.
Yeah, so I could see that one going 1-1.
Okay. And then tomorrow we've got Nets, Celtics, Sixers, Raptors for game 3.
Yep.
And Bulls Bucks for game 2. Do you see any one of those old teams getting a win?
It's my ADD kicking in. So the O team, that I'll take the Celtics.
So Celtics to go 2-0.
Celtics to go 2-0. Sixers to go 3-0. And the third game that
Bulls Bucks.
Yeah, Bulls and the Bucks will win. Although obviously the Bulls showed they're a competitive team. They're good. They're just not going to have quite enough. If someone was going to lose a game, it might be the Bucks right there. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think Chicago will get one in Chicago.
You know the problem with Chicago, right? They're a Lonzo Ball away. Mm. Like, people undersell the complete game that Lonzo Ball comes with.
Right.
Lonzo Ball plays legitimate defense. He's a legitimate point guard who can get the ball to everybody. He understands spacing. He's not selfish. He doesn't care about getting his own shot. He's going to set everybody else up. He can play an up and down game. He can play a half court game. They're a Lonzo Ball away, because letting Zach LaVine be out here just acting like he is the second coming of Carmelo Anthony is not going to win you a championship. He takes way too many shots, and in those too many shots, it's way too many bad shots. Way too many bad. I can just imagine how DeRozan looks at Zach LaVine when he takes some of these shots in his brain, like what's going, like, dude, where did you learn basketball from? Because it almost seems as if DeRozan never takes bad shots. Like that's the juxtaposition of those two players. You have two guys who are supposed to be your best guys, and you have DeRozan who rarely ever takes bad shots. It's just he's going to make it or he's not. And then you have Zach LaVine, who takes a ton of bad shots, but if he gets hot, it's like nuclear hot. And I just can imagine, like, if Zach LaVine had just like a 20% of DeMar DeRozan in him to just take better care of the ball or better care of a possession by not jacking up some random-ass three-pointer, like, they would be so much better. They probably also need to not have Vucevic shooting double-digit three-pointers.
Yeah.
But that's the game today.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, maybe it's the guard that helps kind of facilitate all of that.
Yeah, because I like Caruso, but not as a starter.
Right. Yeah.
I think Caruso is a great guy coming off the bench. Yeah. But as a starter, I think he gets exposed. Kind of similar to interesting enough, kind of similar to Seth Curry. I think Seth Curry's value goes down as a starter than when he comes off the bench and essentially is playing a lot of minutes against second unit guys. But I could be wrong. I don't know. I'm sure there's somebody doing it, crunching a number somewhere that says this is the best road for us to hope.
Yeah, someone's definitely crunching the numbers. And that's why, you know, some of these teams that aren't going to win have flaws that they're going to try to, you know, correct and improve upon, and teams that likely are going to win have fewer flaws, which is my argument for the Celtics. Is I do like them if Robert Williams, that's my caveat. I mean, I like the Celtics advancing with a healthy Robert Williams as well as everyone else. Then I like the Celtics, you know, I'd throw them in there with the Heat as someone that could challenge the Bucks.
So you think that a Robert Williams can keep an Embiid in check?
No, I think the Celtics team defense can keep the Sixers in check enough to make it a series. And, you know, so no, I don't think, you know, that's, I don't think, you know, I mean, again,
do you think that's a thing anymore?
What, team defense?
Keeping somebody in check.
I mean, I think
if you can't rely on a guy to keep somebody in check, then what are we talking about because
guys, you hear Barkley and Kenny Smith talking about all the time, like when they talked about Durant was going to go out and score 30 in the second half, and he certainly had, like, guys will get their numbers, you know. So it's really just a question of how are they getting their numbers, which you've been talking about throughout the pod. You know, what does it take? How easy are they getting to their numbers? And, you know, obviously how many shots and the quality of those shots and how much energy expended, and then how much energy expended on the offensive end translate back down on what they're doing on the defensive end, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not always about, you know, that's, I think, one of the base decisions in coaching, right? Is, you know, what are you trying to give up, and what are you willing to allow? That's Bill Belichick school of coaching. Take something away.
See, because I would argue that if you're going to, like, keeping Embiid in check is not 31 points on 16 shots.
Yeah, well.
Keeping Embiid in check is 31 points on 25 shots, 26 shots.
Right, yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So it's like, can he make it more difficult for him?
I'll tell you this. If I'm coaching against him, I'm giving him different looks on, you know, multiple possessions. So I'm not telling you I'm changing, you know, whatever the pros are able to digest. It's giving him different looks throughout the game. I don't think you can give the pros the same looks. I think it's like defending the best quarterbacks. You have to at least try to some way either disguise, change, do something so they're not just getting exactly what they know or what they're expecting to get on film. So that's what I'm doing. So I would treat the post defense. I would treat the post defense a lot like ball screen defense. You know, the same thing. You know, different looks, so that they're not getting the same. So whatever that would be. Now I'm not saying that would be step one, whatever that translates to.
No, I like it. I'm fascinated by that because I'm into the game plan. Like, what do we do to try to to neutralize? Like, not necessarily stop, because we know that stop is probably not correct. Possible. Correct.
Right.
You know, but what can we do to neutralize or to make it inefficient?
Yeah, and I know, like, we're getting late into the pod, so I think that should be, as these series progress, exactly what we look at, because that's the beauty of the NBA, right, versus the NCAA tournament. And they're both beautiful, but in the NBA, it is about neutralizing and adjusting ultimately to get to four wins, right? And in the NCAA, it's about, can St. Peter's actually do that again one more time? You know, and they don't have to do it three times against Purdue. They don't got to beat, you know, boom, boom, boom. They just got to do it once. That's the fundamental difference between the college game and the pro game. And so it does become, I like it becomes more about neutralizing and not, you know, eliminating or stopping or holding in check, where I think in college it is more about holding in check and eliminating certain things in one game. So I think it's a little bit different mindset.
I like it. I'm really excited to watch. I've got the TV on in the background right now. As we're speaking, the Heat and the Hawks. The Hawks are up 19-18 in the first quarter. Still way too early. You know how these games go.
I was going to say, wait.
Way too early. Unfortunately, on East Coast time, the last game is starting at 10 o'clock. So I don't know how invested.
I can't promise that I'll see that whole thing. But I have been thinking about you and our listeners. So I am I'm committed to watching a lot of NBA basketball and being able to come in here, you know, ready to mix it up the way you were looking to mix it up with me right out of the gate tonight.
Oh, yeah. I came out swinging today.
Yeah, you did.
But it's okay, because I don't have a team to root for. My team's in Cancun right now. They're 1-2-3 Cancun. We have to get into the thought process next time about let's do a little research and find out the last time that a superstar, like a transcendent star, did not make arguably the easiest playoffs in all of sports to make.
Yeah, I don't know if hockey's easier. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
It's a great question.
Yeah,
we're gonna research it. I don't think
it's ever happened.
Yeah, I don't either. That's how remarkable the Lakers was. It's how crazy it is.
The same guy took a bunch of dudes to the finals.
Yeah. The same guy took a bunch of scrubs to the finals who, with Russell Westbrook and Anthony Davis, can't make the playoffs. Something's wrong.
Something is terribly wrong.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. We'll talk about that more next time. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us in the Zebra Stripes podcast. If you don't like the Celtics and the Nets, we'll just apologize ahead of time. But if you like basketball, you've got to love that discussion. That was great. I'm Coach Gene Clemons. You can find me on all social media at Gene Clemons. He is Whit LeJour. You can find him on Twitter at Whit LeJour. Also, if you are a fan of prep hoops, make sure you're following BA Hoops and what they do up there. And if you have a young man who is a stud who's looking for a home, that's kind of a place you might want to look into. Because what better guy to coach him than Coach Whit? You heard it from me. I stand by my word. And if he did something crazy, I would criticize him too. So because I think we only grow from that, being critical. But Whit, I appreciate you as always. Looking forward to talking to you next week. Anything you want to say to the people before we get out of here?
No, I was just going to thank you for that shameless plug, and I thank you for coming after me with both fists, because I'm it makes me a little bit sharper. So next week I'll be sure to bring the fight to you.
Hey, listen, if we're gonna take a week off, you know, yeah. you told me arrested wit is a good wit. So I was ready for everything. The last time we took a week, actually it was 2 weeks we took off, you came out here with like the howlets are out here just launching. So I that wanted to be ready for you.
Well, no excuses tonight. So no, I'll offer up no excuses, but last 24 hours have been long ones here, but good ones. So no excuses.
Absolutely. And we always appreciate you. Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, you all have a blessed one. Peace.